breaking ball and a call. Strike three. Third strikeout for Zach.
He's going to just watch it go. A grand slam for Bryson Stott.
And there's a high fly ball. Deep right field. Harper watches it fly.
WHYY and Billy Penn, it is hitting season. Hey there, podcast pals. I'm John Stolness from The Good Fight and Billy Penn. You can follow me on X at John Stolness. Coming up, Phillies are on some kind of heater right now, gang. As we are recording this on Monday night, the Phillies whitewash the Cincinnati Reds 7-0. They keep that snowball rolling down the hill. Seven wins in a row for the Phils after doing what we said they needed to do a week ago. Bravo to the Phillies. Hats off to this baseball team taking care of business right now. And joining me to talk about what we saw over the weekend and with this game on Monday night against the Cincinnati Reds, can we believe what we're seeing? Justin Clue from Baseball Prospectus, and of course our podcasts over at the Hittin' Season Patreon, The Dirty Inning and Absolutely Hammered. You can follow Justin on X at Justin_Clue. Justin, man, good times. They did the thing, man. They did the thing. They did what we said they had to do.
We've seen them not do it so many times before.
Yes.
You know, this is typically been a time it feels like, oh, they're gonna slip even further into this hole. There was no definitive conclusion about the Phillies coming out on top from even facing these teams. But as far as like, do we believe what we're seeing? I mean, yeah, I was saying that they should win all of these games. They had no reason to lose any of them because even playing the way they were playing, they could beat these two historically bad baseball teams. I hope people are prepared for how bad this might be the worst
really
Chicago
bad.
White Sox team that has ever existed. I'm not even being hyperbolic on that. They're flashing stats on White Sox broadcasts talking about how awful their start has been and how it compares to other terrible seasons there. Not to take away from the Phillies. Like, you'll see that narrative a lot this week that the Phillies, well, yeah, they won six straight against the two worst teams in either league. Sure. But they still had to win those games, and they can still benefit from the momentum they got from those games. As we saw tonight, the Cincinnati Reds are certainly not down at the same level as the two teams the Phillies just played, and they handled them very well. So I feel like it was it's always good to win six in a row, especially when you win seven.
Right, exactly right. Yeah, six in a row is great. Seven in a row, I think, is even one better than six in a row. And as we're recording this, of course, the Phillies, like I mentioned, that 7-0 win over the Reds and just an unbelievably effective and breezy performance from Ranger Suarez. We're going to talk about what this starting rotation is doing here in just a second. But I do want to double back on what you were saying a second ago, because when the Phillies last week entered this six-game swing against the Colorado Rockies and the Chicago White Sox, we knew these teams were probably the worst in each league. We knew the Rockies and White Sox were the worst teams in the National League and the American League. I think we got a good glimpse of how bad they were. I don't know that we were quite prepared. You tried to prepare us about the White Sox last Sunday night when we spoke. You did. Full marks to you for doing that. But I have seen the Phillies welcome teams like this into Citizens Bank Park and not get the job done on numerous occasions. We've seen that a lot. This time around, the Phillies got great starting pitching. They got productive offense. The power was back. Hitting with runners in scoring position was back. It seemed like there were a different couple of heroes every night. It wasn't one guy on a hot streak. It was one night it was Schwarber and Trey Turner. Another night it was Real Muto and Harper. Another night it was Alec Boehm hitting 2 3-run home runs in the same game. And then you just have these starting pitchers one after the other building on each other. This is what a really good baseball team does. And one of the ways you get to the playoffs is by playing 500 against the good teams in the league and by mopping the floor up with the dregs. That's what the Phillies did last week. They mopped up the floor with clear dregs, the Rockies and the White Sox, but that's what a good team is supposed to do. And I wrote an article for The Good Fight about this on Monday. This is not to be poo-pooed, what the Phillies did against the White Sox and the Rockies. We've seen them not take advantage of situations like this in the past. This last week, they got the job done. They took care of business, and they did it in an emphatic way. Were it not for two bullpen meltdowns late in these games, like I think they had the 7-1 lead on the Rockies in what was it, the ninth inning, I think it was in the ninth inning, and managed to escape, or the eighth inning, whatever it was, and won 7-6. But you know, you don't have that Gregory Soto meltdown, and then you have a Ricardo Pinto meltdown when they're up 9-0. The run differential is going to look, it's going to look even worse. I mean, it was the Phillies outscored the White Sox 24-7. They outscored, it was 24-7. It would have been 24-2 without that Ricardo Pinto meltdown. They outscored the Rockies 14-7. It would have been 14-2 without Gregory Soto getting involved. So, I mean, it was a beatdown on a whole other level. And I don't know about you, Justin. I think the win on Monday night, I feel as good about that win as anything else, because it just kind of showed momentum. They took momentum from that six game swing on the road here in this first game in Cincinnati. That's a very encouraging thing to see.
Yeah, you know, there were two times during those six games where I thought, okay, like they're not going to win all six of these. And it was at the end of the first game where they only won 2-1 against the Rockies, where I thought, okay, this is enough to go like 5-1 or 4-2 against these horrible, can't stress this enough, horrible teams. but like they'll probably lose, and to be fair, I was like, they'll probably lose like an Aaron Nola start where he like blows up and gives up five runs in the fifth or something. So like that, I had that moment until the following day when their win was a lot more like resounding. And then going into, again, this isn't super fair, I'm not a ardent anti-Aaron Nola guy, but going into that last game, I was like, you know, this is the one they will blow so that they can't go 6-0, and it just like ruins it a little bit.
And he gave up the two-run home run in the first inning.
And he gave up those early runs, and it was like, yeah, here we go. And then, nope, they handled that quite ably. Offense came right back. Nola locked in, and, you know, that was that. I mean, you're talking about the starting pitching. The highest batting average opponents have against one of the Phillies starters is against Christopher Sanchez, and they're hitting .250 against him. I mean,
unbelievable.
It's, yeah, and like it gets a lot worse. You should see, like, this is even Spencer Turnbull, who I know we're going to talk here. Even he, like, they are not able. He turned out some impressive performances, and it's really been the backbone of this team. And the value of playing these horrible teams is that you can use them to like get back on track in an ideal setting. You go in, you're a little flat against them. The whole appeal is, well, you know, not only should we beat them, but we should be able to get a little bit of confidence and swagger from beating them, because the Phillies aren't one of those teams. You know, as frustrating as they might have been to watch, they are not down there at that level. And it's just nice to confirm that, yeah, you know, hey, we can beat these teams exactly the way a good team would beat them. And then, as to your point, coming into tonight, taking on the Reds, taking on Hunter Green, a team that they struggled to beat at their own ballpark in Philadelphia, and being able to just pound them 7-0. You know, I'll tell you what, I got a little curious tonight watching the Phillies bat after they had put up four runs. They put a little small ball, a couple of sac flies, you know, they weren't pounding the ball, but they were getting runs across, and you know, it's great, whatever, with Ranger pitching the way he pitches, that's all you need. But we got into like the sixth, seventh inning, and you know, I'm watching some of these at bats, and I'm like, I wonder what the Phillies batting average is like from the sixth inning on when they have a lead. And I couldn't work the calculator well enough to get when they have a lead in there. But I thought my hypothesis would be they don't hit as well later in the game, and more of their hits are home runs. Like more of them are just up there swinging, like taking big hacks, trying to like get insurance runs, but nobody's trying to put together a rally. They don't have as much patience. Right. But I don't think I'm right, honestly. Eyeball test, if you had been like, I think that's what's going on, I'd be like, that sounds about right, honestly. This team, they love to get to a point where they can just ride those homers out of the park. But it's just not the case. Right now they have, as far as their percentage of hits that are home runs from the sixth inning on, it's the lowest out of the last 4 years. I just went back to 2021. Wow. And right now, like 12.5% of their hits have been home runs after the sixth inning. And that's pretty low. You know, it's upwards like 15, 16 most of the time. So I got to tell you, this team has a way of proving me wrong, even when I suspect they have like a new flaw that no one's really talking about. Even in this case, you know, sometimes they just look like they're struggling at something that they're not really struggling at.
15-8 on the season, entering play on Tuesday. They've won 7 in a row, obviously. It's only the third time since 1995 they've won 15 out of their first 23 games. And you mentioned the starting rotation has really been the story here. And in the game on Monday night, again, with Ranger Suarez on the mound, one of the really encouraging things that I saw was early in the game, they scored their first three runs in the second, third, and fourth inning, one inning in each inning, with a productive out. They had a runner on third base and less than two outs, and they had a sacrifice fly, and an RBI ground out. Now, generally speaking, obviously, would it be great if one of those guys hit a home run in those spots? Yes, for sure. You get a crooked number up on the board. But we've seen that this team has a lot of trouble in situations just doing the fundamental thing to get the run home. When you've got starting pitching like the Phillies have, it's not going to be this good for the rest of the season, right? They're obviously on a heater right now, and you're just riding that. But when the starting pitching is this good, you just need to get something. You get Ranger three runs, and you scratch him out however you can. You're probably going to be good for the night, and clearly that was the case on Monday night. I thought that was one of the more encouraging things that we saw from this team is getting the ball into the outfield with a runner on third and less than two outs to get those guys home on sacrifice flies. And then, of course, later in the game, you have the 4-0 lead, and Cody Clemens in the ninth inning hits the 3-run bomb. And, you know, then it's party time. The Reds were never in that game to begin with. But I thought that was an encouraging thing, too. Getting the small ball done. You know, you get the triple and then you get him home. We've seen the Phillies struggle with that so much. That's a habit that they need to get into and they need to develop a little bit more. And I thought that was something really cool from Monday night.
Yeah, that was. You're right. I mean, just watching them put together a lead rather than try to blast it all out of the park at once. You know, I don't want to make it sound like I'm against the idea of the Phillies being a homer happy team. I know there's been complaints about them being too reliant on the home run. And if that's like the basis of your offense and those hits just aren't coming, then yeah, you're going to be a little behind the eight ball. But when you're able to get the kind of productive outs in this game that we saw, you know, that's comforting. This team has really struggled to show the different angles at which it can succeed over the first couple weeks of the season. So they used these six games prior to tonight to really show off that they can really lean on their pitching staff. Their offense seems to be seeing the ball a little better, for whatever reason, for now. And you can also rely on them to put together rallies in a variety of ways. They don't have to rely on Cody Clemens to be really excited to be back in the major leagues and absolutely clobber a 3-run home run that I forgot was the epilogue of my, this team really just doesn't, you know, they don't hit as much later in games. And, you know, he was, as I was looking up those numbers, he knocked that ball out of the stadium. But yeah, early on, just seeing them execute was really comforting, because that was one of the most worrisome components of this early part of the season, was seeing them get thrown out on base and not come through with runners in scoring position. You know, you can just score a run early if that's what the opportunity is. You don't have to like pile them on as like eight runs in the first. You don't need to get like knock it out of the stadium every time. You can build a lead that way, and it's good to see them do that.
Let's talk about some of the stars over the course of the last week. Of course, Trey Turner was named National League Player of the Week on Monday. He had an absolutely insane week last week. He has a 10-game hitting streak. He's gone 18 for 43 during the course of the last week. In the week in which he won Player of the Week, he went 12 for 26 with five doubles and a home run. Overall, on the homestand, which includes the Pirates series, he was 18 for 42, which is a pretty good batting average if you do the numbers. You also had a number of other good offensive performances. Alec Bohm went 8 for 18 with three hits in the finale against the White Sox. He had two more hits in the game here on Monday night. Bryce Harper went 8 for 21. Harper on the paternity list, welcoming another child, and that's why Cody Clemens, of course, is on the team, so congratulations to Harper. Kyle Schwarber, his batting average in that week was 143, but slugged 571 thanks to three home runs, five runs, five RBIs, and had three walks in the finale on Sunday. And Johan Rojas, Justin, has found it, it seems. He hit .438 last week with five runs scored in five games and four stolen bases. Had a triple in the game here on Monday night and scored a run. Last week alone was worth 0.4 Fangraphs wins above replacement, which was second most on the team behind Turner and Bohm. So We're talking about the pitching, and I know we're going to talk about the pitching a little bit more, but the offense also, you just knew that when this offense came around with the way the pitchers were pitching, the Phillies were going to be really tough to beat. And this is why I was saying early on, if you're going to have a problem, if the team's going to struggle doing something, struggling with the bats is the preferable alternative. Because if you've got good starting pitching, and right now the Phillies have great starting pitching, it's not just good starting pitching, when that offense comes around, they're a 95 win team. I mean, that's the way they're playing. This is a team capable of winning the division with the way the pitchers are going. And when you get offensive contributions like this,
I don't think there's a lot of teams whose pitchers went like 7 to 9 innings every night for the past 4 nights. I don't think that's much of a thing anymore. And I know Dave Dombrowski has said that's the kind of pitching he still likes. It's probably more of a traditionalist view at this point, but to even just see that the last couple nights has been kind of staggering, and it's an indication of how hard the Phillies can lean on this rotation. As you said, this is the kind of numbers they're putting up aren't the kind of numbers that last, but it's honestly been a testament to the fact that baseball's currency isn't innings or runs. It's time. It's how much time you're going to give a guy to figure things out. You mentioned Johan Rojas, and his success was important enough to the Phillies. We talked about in spring training, he's the guy the Phillies want to see succeed. So they're going to give him, they gave him plenty of time. It really hasn't even been that long. Don't forget.
No, but it felt like a long time, but it really wasn't. It wasn't that long for any of these guys. It's still not long for some of the guys who are struggling. Mm-hmm. You know, I mean, it's really hard to watch guys struggle to hit.
Yeah.
It's really hard, but it hasn't been that long. It's been a few weeks.
Yeah. And so they decided we're going to give him the time to work this out, at least for now. And not that much, like we just said, not that much time went by. And he did seem to lock in. He really did seem to start seeing the ball and find another gear. And that's really important for this. I mean, you saw a lot of things that kind of feed into other things with the way this team can succeed. You know, the Phillies rotation is really letting the bullpen get rested. And yeah, you know, we also saw some bullpen implosions, but it also allows you to go to Jose Alvarado. Okay, we got to go to him. This is turning into a mess. Okay, we got to go to Jeff Hoffman tonight in Cincinnati. But guess what? These guys are feeling okay. Rob Thompson's rigid kind of rest schedule doesn't play as much of a factor because the starters have been going deep. And when your 9-hole hitter starts hitting an acceptable amount and being able to use his speed, which is one of his top weapons, while also providing elite outfield defense. We saw him make a great diving catch on what would have been a mm-hmm. base hit for 20 other center fielders in baseball tonight, at least. All this success feeds into each other, and it makes the whole thing run better.
All right, let's talk about the starting rotation a little bit here, because it really was a ridiculous week of pitching, and it just continues. So you had Aaron Nola go 7 innings, 9 strikeouts, 1 walk in the first game of the series against the Rockies. Ranger Suarez then threw the complete game shutout against the Rockies. Christopher Sanchez followed with 6 innings of shutout ball, 10 strikeouts, and 1 walk to finish off the Rockies series. And Spencer Turnbull takes a no-hitter into the 7th inning, gives up just the 1 hit, no runs, 6 strikeouts. Zach Wheeler the following night takes a no-hitter into the 8th inning, goes 7 1/3, 1-hit innings, 8 strikeouts, 2 walks. Aaron Nola, after some shaky command early in that game on Sunday, goes 8 innings, gives up 4 hits, 2 earned runs, 7 strikeouts. And then Ranger Suarez in the game here on Monday night, 7 innings, 2 hits, no runs, 1 walk, 5 strikeouts. I mean,
they called that hit at the beginning of the game a hit when it should have been an error anyway. So
yeah.
Suarez really only allowed 1 hit tonight, which means your WIP poll tomorrow will be, will the Phillies ever throw a no-hitter again?
That's right. It's a fair question, and maybe we'll bring that up in our upcoming segment. But I think in the last 7 games, I think I saw, yeah, it's they have a 0.53 ERA over their last 7 games. The Phillies.
What do you mean unsustainable?
Yeah. So this is a treat. Obviously. I mean, what we're seeing, the Phillies rotation can't do this the whole year. And we're going to get to this in a minute, because there is going to be a change to the starting rotation coming up during the course of the next week or so as the Phillies are on this road trip. But this is what we're seeing, I don't think we've ever seen before. I mean, even with the 2011 super rotation, I don't remember the starting rotation from top to bottom, 1 to 5. going on this kind of a blitz before. And they've been good all season. Over the last seven games, it's just been remarkable. It really has been. There's really no, I can't really describe it better than that.
That the Phillies are currently equal to the Braves in win total and sit behind them by only two games in the National League East is
one game.
Sorry.
Yeah.
Which is should like be surprising every time you look at it, based on how it has felt to watch this team for the first two weeks of the season, is largely because of their starting pitching. You know, that's, you talk about like this being historic. You're like, boy, how did we got to historic already? I mean, that's crazy. Like I'm sitting down watching like, okay, this is a good start. Okay, another good start. Boy, this team can really rely on its starting pitching. This is great. And then like a couple weeks go by and yeah, you start seeing, hey, this is some of the best stuff that's ever happened. Like, yeah, you got to understand, like, enough time has passed now where it's like, yeah, they have not really stopped being the backbone of this team. And the reason that they were able to stand back up after falling down to start the season.
All right. So for us to kind of continue talking about this, we're going to throw some questions out here for us to kind of debate over. And it's a new segment we're going to start here on Hittin' Season, just as kind of a more organized way for us to talk about what it is that we normally talk about here on the podcast. But it's also a nice little benchmark. These are a little behind the curtain here. It's called a benchmark, folks, when you're doing a radio show or a podcast. That's what we're going to call this segment. It's a benchmark segment called Bull or Boa. So, you know, factor fiction, you know, fair or foul, you know, somebody throws out a question, you know, then the person has to say, oh, that's foul. I don't believe that. Or that's fair. Yeah, I agree with that. Well, we're going with bull or boa here on this Phillies themed Hittin' podcast. Now, bull obviously makes a whole lot of sense. Bull Lazinski, you know, and bull crap, you know. So if something that I say is not true, we're going to call bull. Now, we tried to think of another Phillies name to go along with that made sense. And we came up with boa. Because we felt Larry Boa, Justin, is somebody who is a truth teller, right? You can just imagine. Now, neither of us have been coached by Larry Boa or managed by Larry Boa, but I think the reputation is that he will tell you the truth. He will tell you the truth to your face, and he will tell you the truth whether you like to hear it or not. And so that's, I think, a fair way of assessing a true statement here in this segment by calling it a boa. Is this really... Is this dumber than I think it is, or is this okay?
You're going to ask me if it's dumb? No, I don't think that it's dumb. No,
yeah. Good.
I think we found the way in there with Boa. And yeah, they played on the same team. It makes sense. Bull or Boa. Yeah.
Bull or Boa. All right. So what I'm going to do is I'm going to throw some questions out here, and we're going to discuss them. I'll deliver a statement of fact, and then you start off telling me whether you think it's bull or boa, and then I'll chime in after you're done. So the first one I have is the Phillies are not suddenly awesome, Justin, even though they are on a seven-game winning streak, even though they are 15-8, even though they have gotten off to the hot start that all of us have said that they've wanted to, the hot start that they have failed to get off to the last couple of Aprils. The Phillies are not suddenly awesome. They've just played awful opponents. Bull or boa?
It's not that it's not a factor, you know, like that's the problem. It's not sure. That it's not a factor. They played really. I mean, I gave you the stats last week. All I can do is assure you that, like, from what we've seen thus far, at least one of those teams might be one of the worst teams of all time in all of baseball by design, no less.
Yeah. By design.
So you can't say that isn't going to be a factor when you play them. That's why it's such a benefit that they played them. That's why it's such a benefit that the Braves get to play the Marlins right now. Like,
yeah,
those games are still going to count, but the Marlins are a pretty easy opponent at the moment. So that's definitely a factor. But I also, you know, I think there are things to gain and things to benefit from beating up on two weak opponents in a row and, you know, looking better while doing it. They didn't get to feel that way against any other opponents. And like, yeah, it would have been nice if they had six games against the Braves and Dodgers where they looked this way, but that's not what happened. I still think they were able to benefit from this momentum, and they look a lot looser. And you know, they came out tonight and beat a better team than either one of those teams by a pretty significant margin, mm-hmm. getting a lot of the same kind of performances they've gotten. So I guess I'm going to lean boa I'm going to lean Boa that this is they used playing those terrible teams to find a new gear, and you'll see a better, more confident Phillies team moving forward.
I'm going to say Boa as well, and I agree. I think it certainly is a factor playing the Rockies and the White Sox, getting some pitchers who really don't have a whole lot. The offense was able to get a little bit of their mojo back. And the weather got warmer, too, and that helped. It was a nicer week of baseball at Citizens Bank Park, so I think the offense was a little bit better. But I think the pitching staff, you look what the pitching staff is doing, and yes, the Rockies and the White Sox lineups are certainly not very good. But we know that we already knew it was a good rotation coming into the season. It's not as if these are a bunch of no-name underachievers like the Mets have been kind of running out there here early in the season. And they're kind of pitching over their heads. Again, we don't expect them to sustain this level of pitching, but I think it's legitimate how well they're playing right now. We've seen this team play like this in the past, and we're just seeing it earlier in the season right now, thankfully, because really the Phillies have one thing going for them that a lot of teams don't have going for them right now, and that's, generally speaking, they're healthy. They have a healthy starting rotation. They have a healthy pitching staff. They have a pretty healthy lineup, and I'm knocking on wood here because certainly that can change at any moment, but for the moment, they're benefiting from health, and yes, they benefited from a schedule, but I think the Phillies are a legitimately really good team. When they're pitching like this, they're every bit as good as the Braves can be, and they're every bit as good as the Dodgers can be, because they can pitch with any of those teams, and that's how you win 100 games in this league, is by the starting pitching and by having a competent offense. And the offense right now is more than competent. They're performing really well. So I'm going to say Boa on this as well. I don't think they should be at the top of anybody's MLB power rankings right now. I think if they're in the 5 to 7 neighborhood, I certainly wouldn't argue that. I could argue a little higher. I could argue a little lower than 5. But, you know, I think that's right around where they are. And you got to take advantage of the cream puffs when they're in front of you. And the Braves are going to get these guys. The Braves played the White Sox and split the two games they were able to play before there was a rainout. So, I mean, you get these guys, they come to your stadium. If it had been like, you know, they got by the skin of their teeth and it looked awful like it did the first couple weeks, you could maybe say, yeah, they lucked out. They demolished these two teams. They just demolished them. And I think the way that they won also tells me that this was more of an indication that the Phillies are good than the opponents they played were really, really terrible.
Coming into this game, Zach Wheeler had made 3 starts and the Phillies had lost all 3 of them. They were
4,
all.
It was 4.
4?
Yeah, it was 4.
Okay.
Yeah.
Then even worse. And I believe at least 3, if not all 4, were entirely winnable games. Mm-hmm. That even just a little bit of offense would have won them those games. So that just tells you, I mean, that's just one example, but that just is a good example showing you that the pitching has been here all season. You know, there's been a couple of hiccups and a bad start here or there, but for the most part, the starting pitching has been here waiting for the offense to show up. And if you need 2 bad teams with horrible pitching for your offense to remember, well, how good it is, so be it.
Right.
Like we said, one game worse than the Braves, the team that looked miles ahead of the Phillies for the first 3 games of the season.
All right, here's the next one. And I'm going to read some pitching statistics here before I throw the question out at you. With Zach Wheeler and Spencer Turnbull both having no hitters into at least the 6th inning in those 2 back-to-back games, they were the first 2 Phillies pitchers to do that since the expansion era in 1961. After Saturday's win, since ERA became an official stat in both leagues in 1913, only one MLB team has had its starters combine for 40 or more strikeouts with an ERA of 0.25 or lower over a 5-game span, and that was the Phillies. Unbelievable. And frankly, the next 2 games with Nola and Suarez, they may not have been able to hold that particular statistic up, but still stacking great starts one on top of the other. So my question is, and I already told you, over the last 7 games, a 0.53 ERA from these guys. The Phillies rotation, Justin, is pitching better than the 2011 Super Rotation ever did. Bull or Boa?
So the question is the entire rotation versus the entire rotation.
That's okay. The question.
Then, yeah, I think it's Boa. I do. Now, like, the caveat there is no one in the current Phillies rotation will ever be as good as Roy Halladay. And I would say Cliff Lee, you know, that's probably more comparable to the level of which like a Zach Wheeler is, or a guy who looks utterly dominant, but Halliday was just on another planet, his Hall of Fame, complete phenom, you know, just a different kind of thing. I want to make that clear. But in that 2011 season, Roy Oswalt missed a lot of time. You know, he wasn't, actually, I feel like he was not around very long for most of that season. Joe Blanton, I think, got hurt. Vance Worley was in the rotation.
Was the main guy,
He came up and he looked awesome. He was great. He led the league in called third strikes, I think, for a while. So that's not, again, not coming down on the legend status of that rotation and some of the guys individually in it. Well, all of the guys individually in it, but this current rotation, the difference here is that they're getting top to bottom results with consistency from all of these guys. You know, you keep expecting Christopher Sanchez to, like, he gives up a couple runs early. You're like, well, okay. But then he, like, settles in. And then it's like 5-6 innings later, you're like, those are the only runs he gave up. He gave up scattered 5 hits, has 8 or 10 strikeouts. You're like, this is our number 5 starter. Like, this is not the guy you're supposed to, you know, rely on to get you deep into a game. This is just a guy filling a spot on most teams. So the 1-5 comprehensive success that the Phillies are able to get from this team, from this rotation, where it just feels like any one of these guys could show up and be a stopper on most days. You know, maybe there's just descending amounts of potential for that to happen when you go guy to guy. But right now, it seems like nobody's pitching better. And just the comprehensiveness of their success kind of puts them apart from, I think, even that 2011 rotation.
And I'll say Boa as well. Now, what I will say is I think Zach Wheeler is pitching as well as Roy Halladay did during that 2011 campaign. And I think Cliff Lee is another Zach Wheeler. So they had two Zach Wheelers at the top of their rotation, and the Phillies have one. I think like a Cole Hamels and Aaron Nola are pretty similar comparisons. You get based on skill set and kind of the results. They both would struggle with the long ball sometimes. You know, they'd have little streaks where it was kind of rough sailing for them. So I kind of equate Nola and Cole Hamels a little bit there. But Rangers, I think the big key with this 2024 rotation is how good is Ranger Suarez, right? Like, how is he going to be another ace in the middle of the rotation? He's pitching like one now. He's pitching like a Cy Young contender. He's pitching like a guy who's certainly going to go to the All-Star game. Really, all four Philly starters are pitching like they're going to go to the All-Star game. But Ranger Suarez has had the best season out of any of them so far. I mean, you have this consecutive inning streak going right now, 25 straight scoreless innings for Ranger Suarez. It's the longest scoreless inning streak by a Phillies pitcher since Cliff Lee threw 30 2/3 scoreless innings from August 17th to September 10th, 2011. So you have Ranger Suarez pitching like peak Cliff Lee right now, essentially, is what we're looking at. And it's the honest truth. If you're just now, the question is, can he keep doing it? Can he keep pitching like this? It certainly looks sustainable. Like he's throwing an easy 92, 93 miles an hour. And his command of his breaking stuff. And it's all working for him right now. It'll go away a little bit at a certain point. But I think right now, they're all pitching. The 24 Phillies are pitching better than the 2011 Phillies pitched at any point during that incredible 2011 season. Of course, staying power is going to be the big key here. And we don't really know what Ranger Suarez will ultimately finish the year looking like. But if Ranger Suarez pitches like Cliff Lee did in 2011, which is what we've seen so far, this rotation will, I think, end up at the end of the day being better. Through the first 22 games, the 2011 rotation had a 3.41 ERA. This one has a 2.25 ERA. 2.61 FIP for the 2011 team, 3.11 for the 24 team. So the fielding independent pitching was better for 2011. They were a little bit better in Fangraphs wins above replacement as well. But the strikeout to walk ratio is the same. 2011 team had a 1.13 whip. This group has a 0.96 whip. And the 2011 group had a 2.38 batting average against. The 24 starting rotation, a 188 batting average against through the first 22 games, not including the Monday night game. So it's fun to watch. We'll see how it all shakes out. But right now, I think this rotation is pitching every bit as good as that 2011 rotation did. Really incredible to watch. One more question on the rotation, and that is what the Phillies are going to do at the back end with Spencer Turnbull. He leads the league, or at least came into the day leading the league in ERA, and he's likely going to be moved to the bullpen so that the Phillies can bring up Taijuan Walker from his rehab starts in Lehigh Valley. Now, Turnbull has 31 innings pitched last year. He has been on the shelf for much of the previous two seasons before that with Tommy John surgery. So the Phillies bringing up Taijuan Walker, I think all things being equal, this wouldn't be happening. But Taijuan Walker is going to come back up. He has the contract. He says he's ready to go. You can't just keep him in the minors. Probably can't pitch him in the bullpen. Maybe you can. Maybe you can't. Spencer Turnbull is pitching unbelievable baseball right now. So bull or boa, Justin, Spencer Turnbull should absolutely stay in the starting rotation. There's no way they can take him out. Bull or boa?
Bull. I think you do have to factor in his ability to throw pitches and how many he's thrown so far. I'm not saying he should not come back to the rotation. I'm saying that combined with the fact that you got to put Taijuan Walker in there. You're paying too much for Taijuan Walker. And, you know, that is his spot, you know, in the rotation. I don't think that alone is the reason to get him back in there. And I'm with the people who are not as excited to see him coming back based on past performance and how things have been working so well so far. Like, it almost feels like the last thing you want to do is throw this out of whack. But the truth is, you do have to be mindful. I would rather be mindful and cautious of Spencer Turnbull's pitch count thus far. Yeah, you could leave him in there and just see when he burns out, but it would happen at some point. Like, the guy has not thrown enough to blast his way through a full season of starts. He just doesn't. He was picked up to do this role, to be your starter when you need one, to be your long reliever when you need one. Like, this is why Dombrowski brought him on. So I think it's worth celebrating that when the Phillies needed starts this early in the season, he was able to give them to them and give them to them so well.
Yeah.
So incredibly, so much better than anyone would have guessed that he would have been able to pitch.
Right.
But that just means you're going to see more Spencer Turnbull. Anytime the Phillies need a starter, it's going to be his name first. But I think you got to send him to the bullpen just to keep that arm fresh.
Yeah, and you know what? You build up his innings. I'm going to call bull on that as well. You build up his innings this year, and you know, maybe you can get him to 100 innings. You can have him in the starting rotation next year. You know what I mean? You can figure out something else to do. I mean, I know they kind of like the idea of hopefully Mick Abel progresses, so maybe you don't sign Spencer Turnbull. I mean,
and I've seen people try to talk about a 6-man rotation, but they don't want to do that.
No, Zach Wheeler doesn't like that. Nope.
They don't want to do that. And, you know, that's, you got, when you're pitching as well as Zach Wheeler, I mean, the last thing you want to do is throw a guy's rhythm off. Like, a lot of these guys, that's what they're operating on, is rhythm.
Yeah.
So, no, you don't want to throw that into the mix either. So, I think you got to do what is perhaps illogical statistically, but I think thinking about the future and knowing that this doesn't mean Spencer Turnbull's really going anywhere.
Right.
This is the move to make.
All right. The next bull or a boa, we're going to go to the offense now. And this is kind of a fun one. I heard somebody, I think I saw somebody on Twitter mention this as a possibility. So I'm going to, it's not a steal necessarily, because it was just like an idle thought that passed by someone's heads. But if I'm stealing it, sorry, you know, I don't remember. Kyle Schwarber.
Committing crimes on camera. Unbelievable.
And I'm just admitting it totally. Kyle Schwarber is at 252 career home runs right now. Ryan Howard finished his career with 382. I didn't realize he'd hit that many, actually, now that I'm thinking about it. 382. Schwarber is 130 home runs behind Howard in his career, and Schwarber is 31 years old. Bull or boa, Kyle Schwarber will finish with more home runs for his career than Ryan Howard. Now, I don't... Not as a Philly. Like, he's not going to hit more home runs than Howard as a Philly. But Kyle Schwarber will finish with more career home runs than Ryan Howard's 382. He's 130 home runs behind right now, and he's 31 years old.
Well, so he needs 5 seasons of 26 home runs, at least, according to my math.
Yeah.
I'm going to say bull. I'm going to say he comes up just shy. I think he gets close, but I don't think, I don't think he hits that total.
Yeah, I say bull as well. I mean, I think
sluggers fall off. Their lifespans are not long. Now they're not. And I'm not saying I don't want to put that out there for him because he's still doing fine, chugging along, looking good this year. Had a few more singles than walks earlier. That was a little alarming, a little startling.
Yeah.
See his batting average so high so early in the season. But
disconcerting. You
know, he has a job. You know, he has a role, and it is a very fun role, and it throws people off when they look at his stat lines. But I also think, having watched Ryan Howard and having watched other sluggers of Howard's generation and those that followed, that when you're as pure a slugger as those guys, you know, that ends sometimes kind of abruptly. Consistency is the toughest thing to maintain, I would say. When you're hitting 40 home runs a season, that's tough to do for a bunch of seasons.
It's tough to do. I'll call bull on it as well, but I will say with the DH, I think he's got a shot. I think he can hang on. He could be a guy who ends up being kind of like a Matt Stairs for the last 5 years of his career, and he could play into his late 30s and hit 15 home runs a year and just kind of tack on. You know, he might have like three or four more years of 30 to 35 homers, get himself within shouting distance, and then overtake Howard at that point. But I think it really does kind of also play into, like, Ryan Howard hit a lot of home runs, and I think we kind of, the end of his career soured us a little bit on his legacy just because it was kind of tough to watch him at the end. But man, 382 home runs, it's not going to get him in the Hall of Fame. That is a lot of home runs. That is as many home runs as Kyle Schwarber has hit. To still be 130 away from Ryan Howard is saying something else. All right, let me throw another bull or boa at you here. Brandon Marsh is 100% making the All-Star team this year.
The only thing that's against Brandon Marsh is recognition of what he's accomplished. And it feels like all anyone is ever doing is pointing out how his stats compare to, like, Mike Trout and Mookie Betts. Mm-hmm. But no one, I don't know if anybody outside of Philadelphia is really giving him the credit, because he's obviously not going to get voted in. He would have to be, he would have to be selected as a bench player. And maybe he's got a shot there within the sport, but isn't it Lavulo will manage the National League team, and he's not going to have any love for any unheralded Phillies.
True.
So I, unfortunately, I'm going to say bull on 100% lock that he will make the All-Star team. But keep in mind, what I just said are logistic issues, not statistical or performance issues. Performance issues, to me, he's already on the team. That's got to be unquestionable. Him and Trey Turner have been some of the most consistent offense this team has had this year. Everyone knows this. Everyone listening to this show knows this about Brandon Marsh, but it would be an uphill battle fighting through that scene to get to the All-Star team.
I'm going to say boa, because I actually do think he has, because of all his appearances in the postseason, the Phillies are selling out games pretty much every night now. If the team getting off to a fast start means, I think we're going to continue to see fans pour into the stadium. I think he's going to continue to be like, if he continues to hit, like, people are going to be talking about him. He's just such a fascinating guy. I think he can get enough votes. I think he could. There's an outside chance that he could get in as a starter.
That's not what you asked. You asked if 100%. It was a 100% lock.
It's bull.
That's
it's
what I'm disagreeing with.
You're right. It's okay. It's a pits bull. You're right. I'm sorry.
Now you're making it sound like I said, no, he's not an All-Star.
You don't like Brandon Marsh. I know you just had it in for him for a long time, and I just wanted to hear you say it with your own mouth. That's all.
I'm not like you, John. I don't come on this show to tear these top performers down and feast
athletes
on their downfall.
I know.
Like a vulture.
I know. That's
eating
just me.
Roadkill. I'm not like you.
I'm glad of that. We can't have too many people like that on the podcast. It's not good for business.
Picking the bones clean.
That's right.
Shameful.
Right, to finish up, let's do a couple outside of the Phillies here. The New York Mets are 12-9, and coming into Tuesday had the same run differential as the Phillies at +11. And I think it was it who wrote a story about it for the Athletic? They wrote it. I think it was Jeff Pass. Oh no, it was Tyler Kepner, Jeff Pass, and I don't remember. One of those guys wrote a story about why we should.
Let's just list
in the Mets.
All of them.
Yeah, it's
list all the Athletic baseball.
All of the
writers,
Athletic baseball writers. Yeah, they all wrote about the Mets this week, and the article was, yes, we should be worried about the Mets, or yes, the Mets are for real. So my question, bull or boa? Yes, we should be worried about the Mets this year, Justin.
Bull. I'm not, honestly, I haven't even really looked into this and read into this. Like, I was reminded by someone else how much success the Mets have had since falling on their faces to start the season. And then, you know, all you need is to look at the standings to see, yeah, it's true. They have recovered since, I believe, April 7th. They have had the fourth most hits in all of baseball.
Yeah.
Which is the second highest total in the National League. The Phillies are in the top 10 in that category too, but you know, they're a step or two behind the Mets the past few weeks when it comes to offensive output. So, you know, I see why that article exists right now, and I can certainly see the Mets being an annoying team moving forward, and not just as, you know, who they are and what they represent and the people associated with them. But as far as like performance goes, they can certainly be a gnat in the ear of teams trying to gain ground or put a win streak together. But I don't think I'm going to say bull on the Mets being like a serious problem moving forward. I just feel that they have a way of falling apart. You know, it is the Mets. Perhaps you've heard of this. This trend.
Heard of this
with the Mets.
I have heard of this.
I have been fooled before into thinking that concept was on its way out, that the Mets culture had changed, that this is a new Mets, and they don't do that anymore, and I'm not going to fall for that again.
Yeah.
This team was not constructed to succeed in 2024. They said, we are rebuilding, to Max Scherzer, who then went and told the press what the Mets told him. Probably he wasn't supposed to do that, but they were like, we're rebuilding. We're not going to be competitive again until 2025, maybe 2026. They did that in the middle of a season where they were trying to contend, then blew it up midway through. This season is the direct sequel to that season. And yes, they have good players on their team. They locked up Brandon Nimmo for a reason, even though he was having a terrible start to the season. Jeff McNeil, Pete Alonso, obviously Francisco...
Lindor.
Lindor. You know, obviously they have good players on their team, and good players are going to get hot, and they'll probably put some win streaks together and, you know, be around 500, you know, one of those teams that's just around. But I don't expect big things from the Mets in 2024.
Yeah, they might sniff. I'm going to say, bull, that we should be worried about the Mets. They might hang around as like a third wild card team. I don't think they'll make it. I think they'll finish under 500 this year. Alvarez being out for about 6 to 8 weeks certainly hurts them. And they don't have Kodai Senga for until, I think, late May or something like that. And even when he comes back, it's going to be questionable how much he's going to be able to give them. The starting rotation just doesn't give them any length at all. And the bullpen's going to get exposed at a certain point there in New York. And yeah, they've got some. There's going to be a series where they absolutely give the Phillies fits, right? Where they come into Citizens Bank Park and take 2 out of 3 or 3 out of 4 and drive us crazy. But overall, this is not a team that I think anybody really needs to be worried about. So I'm going to say bull, that we do not need to be worried about the Mets. Last thing, the Houston Astros. Justin, I don't know if you've been keeping up on what's been going on out there in the American League Central. I'm pulling up the standings right now to see what happened here on Monday night with your Houston Astros. Your Houston Astros. They enter Tuesday. Yeah, you're in Houston. Don't pretend you don't love them. 7-16 after losing. Yeah, it's you. I'm talking about you. 7-16 after losing 2 out of 3 to the Washington Nationals in the nation's capital this week. So they've had a multitude of different problems. They have pitching injuries. Christian Javier was scratched from the game on Sunday because of an injury. Framber Valdez is out for a couple. It's just, it's been a mess in Houston. Bull or boa, the Houston Astros will miss the playoffs this year.
Boy, the twisted magic that they've been able to maintain in Houston is such a reason to say bull on that, but it also just kind of feels like the timing is right. Like they're starting to get some bounces that don't go their way. They're starting to have some injury problems. Everybody's a little older. This is not the 2022 team. You know, they're like top 10 in offensive categories, you know, like slash line and everything. They have been able to like hit and hit for power, but yeah, there's some weak spots here that clearly have resulted in them being still one of the teams that doesn't even have double digit wins yet in a division where, boy, there are plenty of teams that would be willing to take that division away from them, you know, like that would be willing to capitalize on a weakened Houston team. So I don't know, man. This has been a rough start, rougher than anybody probably imagined. So right now, I'm gonna enjoy this and say that, yeah, the Astros missed the playoffs, because that's just the more interesting answer.
So you're going BOA. They will miss the playoffs. You think that's a true statement?
I'm gonna I forgot the rules there for a second.
Play
that's
the game,
bad.
Man. Golly, I'm gonna go bull on this. With the third wild card, you can absolutely screw things up in the first month of the season with the Astros. And they are a good enough team to recover from this. They play in a division that doesn't, I mean, yes, the world champions play in that division, but I think the Astros still are as good as the Rangers are. And
yeah, you know what? We're logicking this. That AL West, like the Rangers, are they leading it and they're like 500?
Yeah, it's not a great place right now. I'm looking at it again. They have a 12-11 record. Yeah, as the top team.
That there are teams that would be more than happy to take the crown from the Astros doesn't mean that they are equipped to take the crown. And actually, that is a division of like teams three stooging their ways out of winning the AL West and missing the playoffs entirely. Right. So yeah, that actually. I'm not going to change my answer. I already said it, but I do think yours actually makes a lot more sense.
Now I picked the Astros to go to the World Series and lose to the Phillies in the World Series. So I don't think they're getting back to the World Series this year. I think we see they have enough holes. If they got to play, you know, they typically haven't had to play that wild card round and then play all those different other rounds. So I think that could be their undoing this year. If they have to get there, it's going to be a real struggle the whole way to get in there. And they haven't had to do that really before. But I do think the bar is low enough to be the third wild card in the American League that the Houston Astros can rally and get hot and go on a run and make the postseason. So many of the different statistics you see out there. Well, no team that's ever scored has had as few wins through this many games has ever made the playoffs. We've only had three wild cards in baseball for this is the third year now. And before that, we only had two wild cards for seven or eight years before that. So it used to be four teams from each league made the playoffs for the longest time. And before that, it was only two teams per league up until 1993. So a lot of those numbers just, you know, if this was 1993, the Astros are cooked already, but so is a third of baseball. They're already cooked. You know, you're under 400 winning percentage at the end of April. You're done. There's no recovering from it at all. You're just cooked. And that's why Major League Baseball loves the wild card, because no matter where you are right now, if you've got a decent team, even if you've gotten off to a slow start, you can still get to the World Series. You can still get to the playoffs. So, I think the Astros will make the playoffs. I don't think they will miss the playoffs when all is said and done. All right. I liked Bull versus Bo. I don't know. We do this every week, but I think this is a fun segment, and it's, we'll bring it some Phillies topics and baseball topics and throw some other stuff into the mix as we do it moving forward a little bit too. So, all right, let's finish things up here. Justin, the Phillies finish up this series against the Reds. It's three more games against Cincinnati. It's a four game series against the Reds here. The Reds are now 12-10 on the season. Then they go to San Diego for a three-game series against the Padres this weekend, and then they'll go to LA for a three-game series against the 9-13 Angels. So that's a 10-game swing here. They're off to a 1-0 start. What record would you be happy with, Justin, after this 10-game trip through Cincinnati, San Diego, and Los Angeles? Is 500 enough? Is 5-5? Does that suffice? Does it need to be better than 500?
If they go 5-5 after going having such a successful homestand, they went 8-2 on that homestand.
It was 8-2. Yeah.
Yeah. We're still at the point where numbers are fluctuating a great deal in the early parts of the season. The same applies to goodwill from the people, and you will not see people as excited. They'll be, oh, this just confirms that they were just playing bad teams. Blah, blah, blah. You'll see a lot of that out there. I honestly would want them to finish with the road trip with a winning record. They're playing some tougher teams, and obviously, you know, the undefeated aspect of the last six games, well, seven now, it's going to end at some point, and they're playing, you know, a level up, but these are all teams they should be able to beat as well. Yep. They really are. So, and they should be able to beat more than just the worst teams in the league. So I would say at least 6-4. And that gets you to, because counting tonight, that'll get you to 20 wins.
Yeah.
If they finish the road trip like that. And that's a nice round number. That'll be right up there with the better teams in baseball. All the narratives that'll come spiraling out of that, that they, oh, they only went 6-4. You can respond and say, hey, look, they're in no really worse shape than all these other teams that are, you know, supposed to be at the top of the league. They're right where they're supposed to be. They're right where they're right where they have been the past few years. Not really anything to worry about.
No, they if they do that, and I agree, 6-4, I think is the number. I'd be happy with 6-4. Certainly, you want a little bit more than that, but 6-4 would be the number that I would be pleased with. And they finish with 20 wins. You know, they're off to a good start. You know, we can't. This is not. You know, it's.
I know. I feel crazy. I don't. Watching them for 2 weeks, I was like, this is a bad start. We're having a bad start. And then, like, 1 week later, they're like, this is the greatest Philly start in 5 years.
Yeah.
But I don't think that's true. But there are the numbers.
they're
saying differently. So,
yeah.
What team have I been watching? You know?
Yeah.
But yeah, I here we are.
This feels like the Phillies we saw last August. And it's really nice to see that they're putting this together here in April and taking advantage of the soft schedule. We talked about how important that was with these extra home games in April and May and facing a weaker part of your schedule to take advantage of it. The Phillies have done that. They've done what we've asked them to do. And if they go 6-4 on this road trip, I think that's a fair request of them. And if people want to say, well, they went 6-4, you know, and they played some bad teams. There are teams in way worse shape than the Phillies, and the Phillies will have put themselves in great company. They will be right there with the best teams in the league. They'll still be right there with the best teams in the league if they go 6-4. So I think it would be a fine road trip to go 6-4, and maybe they do a little bit better. But just playing great baseball right now with the way the pitching staff is going, the bullpen's nice and rested, and the offense has just found a nice little groove. You know, they're not putting up 12, 13 runs a game, but they're getting the little things done, and they're hitting just enough home runs and hitting just enough doubles to kind of get things moving along. And different guys are stepping up every night. So it's just they're just playing real well, playing real good baseball as they start this road trip with a win against the Reds here on Monday night, 7-0. Let's finish up with some final thoughts. Justin, final thoughts, buddy.
Did you happen to see the drama unfold when some Phillies fan?
Oh, OK. Go ahead. Yeah.
Some Phillies fan dared to point out that Blooper was not invited to the Philly Fanatics mascot birthday party.
I did see a tweet about that, but I didn't see anything else.
Going off a picture. Well, he wasn't there. No. And the reason, of course, is that the Braves were at home. So he was doing that. But that's not what we're doing when we say that that Blooper was not invited. And Blooper being Blooper, the online, you know, social media presence that he has made famous since last year when he had a meltdown after getting antagonized by Phillies fans, who then put his head on a stick at an Eagles tailgate and then turned to the Rams mascot and said, you're next. And he was like, on Twitter, he was like, I just read your profile. I'm good. Have a nice Saturday. And everyone's like, good. All right. We're on the right page.
That's great.
But, Blooper, of course, name searched himself, found people talking about how he wasn't at the birthday party, and had another meltdown on social media today, showing you that once again the Braves are not a top to bottom. You know, they're not locked in organizationally.
No.
In every possible corner,
not
as airtight
in.
As they may seem at times.
Goodness gracious. I want to finish on. Did you see the Aaron Boone, Harry Wendell thing today? So for the people who didn't see it, you should go on it. The umpire, for whatever reason, was the field mic. You could hear everything the home plate umpire was saying. And he starts – Aaron. Somebody in the Yankees dugout, it might have been Aaron Boone, was giving him a hard time about the strike zone early in the game. There was a pitch I think it was in the first or second inning. And Wendelstedt starts screaming at Aaron Boone, I hear one more word out of you, you're out of here. So Boone's like, okay. And then somebody from the stands directly behind Boone yells something at Wendelstedt. Wendelstedt throws Aaron Boone out of the game. And this is all you could hear all of this on the field, Mike. It's on YouTube. It's on Twitter. It's everywhere. If you haven't seen it, it's very easy to find. And Boone comes out like, I didn't say anything. There was somebody in the stands. And then Wendell Stats answers, I don't care. You're gone. Or I don't care where it came from. You're gone. And even after the game, once Wendell Stats is confronted with the fact that the guy he kicked out of the game actually did as he was told and wasn't arguing with him, maintained that no, it came from the farther part of the dugout, the farther reaches of the dugout. And I don't want to kick out any players because players are really important to the game. So I kicked out the manager because everything that happens in the dugout is his responsibility. To which it should be noted, Mr. Wendelstadt, you didn't have to throw anyone out of the game. He seemed to be under the impression that he had no choice but to kick someone out of a game there. And since he couldn't kick Larry the Fan out, and he didn't know, and there was really nobody else that he could turn his ire to, once he realized he made a mistake, he didn't admit to it, he didn't cop to it, he didn't say, sorry, Aaron, I thought it was you, go back to the dugout, just keep your mouth shut. Could have done all that, but no, it was ump show time, and I know we've talked about the umps a lot on this podcast. It was a ridiculous display, and the fact that this arrogant guy was I was going to say a different word. This arrogant dude was refusing to admit his mistake afterwards and had this ridiculous umpiring in baseball has got to be reformed with Angel Hernandez and guys like this.
What I was going to say. It was a real rough 2 weeks just this early in the season to see Angel Hernandez calling strike after strike outside of the strike zone when you're just like, what are you doing, man?
It's not even close.
This is just not where you're supposed to be. And that, again, like you said, we've talked about this ad nauseum on this show before, but any kind of accountability is too much. The fact that Wendelstadt even gave like a speech to talk to reporters is anomalous because usually they don't even have to do that. And when he does, you know, he's got this fun little spin on it. But the fact of the matter is there's still a bunch of umpires and it's I think it's still those older generational umpires who just maintain that philosophy and approach to their jobs of like a substitute teacher or some kind of authority figure who oversees children, who thinks the easiest way to do their job is to be dense and stubborn because any kind of scrutiny or nuance is too complicated and is just beyond their understanding. Like they can't lead or be in charge like that. So they have to simplify things down to, well, I'll just eject him because that's who I think said, well, I didn't say it. He said it. Well, I don't care about any of that because I've already made my decision. And the worst thing I could do is go back on something or appear wrong.
Yeah.
And it's old and it's outdated and it's archaic and it's at this point useless. I mean, on the other hand, I got to say, when they say the human element is valuable in baseball, here we are talking about it, and it is entertaining.
It is entertaining.
it is entertaining to see umpires mess up like that.
It's an entertaining piece of video, folks. If you haven't seen it, I encourage you to go watch it because you get to watch a grown human man and this arrogant, bumbling fool make an idiot out of himself. And then you read the transcript afterwards of him trying to explain it. It's like, man, just dig, just crawl in that hole once you're done and just – pour the dirt over you because it's your career.
Except there is no hole.
Career-wise, yeah. That there's no hole. And that way, yeah, we can walk right over it and it's fine. So, yeah, it was just an unbelievable, not a good April for umpiring. And something's got to be done about this. And it feels like there's a groundswell of support for some kind of umpire reform to take place. And what that looks like with the umpiring union and all that.
Bull or boa. Angel Hernandez finishes the season a member of the MLB umpires union.
Well,
I guess he still would be so you don't think they would like finally respond by giving us Hernandez, just him, no one else, being like Hernandez is done.
I think it would take something more remarkable than what we've seen for that to happen in season. Now I certainly think you might be getting to a point where after a season's over you have somebody come to him and say, we got to end this, man, you know, and it's quiet. Angel Hernandez announces his retirement, you know, he can, or maybe even at the end of maybe the compromise is in August of this year, Angel Hernandez announces this is going to be his last season or the umpiring crew announces it. And so he goes on a farewell tour so that everybody in it can throw things at him. And then they let
him do the World Series. Like you were saying, they weren't letting him
Series with Angel Hernandez. Oh, right behind home plate.
Oh my God. It's going to be terrible
thing.
Do you think if Joe West body slammed a guy on the field like he did today, if he did it, do you think he would be kicked out? Again, this happened in real life.
He might.
I believe it was a Phillies player he body slammed.
Because you can't, you just can't do that.
That's
maybe
what they said back then.
Yeah, that's true. Yeah, it's. I don't think the umpiring union is the most. I don't know. It seems like it's the strongest union in American history.
Yeah, I mean, Rob Drake's still umpiring, so they've got some kind of leverage.
They got some kind of leverage there, so we don't know exactly what the deal is, but I think Angel Hernandez finishes the season. We could be reaching a point of critical mass where he can't come back after this year, but I don't think he gets the boot midseason. I just don't see them doing that to him, especially a longtime guy. You know, as much as we ridicule him, he's probably very well-liked among other umpires, or at least the older guys.
Sure, you don't want to... You know, the last thing you want to do is embarrass Angel Hernandez.
That's the last thing he just wouldn't know how to handle embarrassment.
Reputation, just, you know, one hit could ruin his perfect record, so I understand.
Can you imagine being that blissfully unaware of the reputation your hit you're taking, or to not care about it to the degree that
he
does?
Like, I do think that is what is going on there. I think he is just like a... you know, golden retriever kind of approach to it. I has to be it.
Yeah,
like I think he knows there is like a lot of criticism out there, but he just files it away as like, yeah, we umpires, our job is so tough. Yeah. Everyone thinks they can do it better than us, and they can't. And you know, here we are, and I'm just one of you guys too. Another one of these umpires people are complaining about. Oh man, what a time!
Don't we have
rough
guys?
No idea.
Yeah,
yeah. I think and they're all like trying to like get away from him. And you're like, oh, hey guys, yeah.
It's a hard...
Where are we all going after this?
It's a hard racket, man. I gotta tell you what. Oh man. All right. Well, we'll see what happens with that. But yeah. Anyway, Phillies getting ready to finish their four game series with the Reds here this week, and then they'll hit the road looking for this 7-game winning streak to continue here, and look for the good times to keep on rolling with Christopher Sanchez, and maybe it all comes crashing to a halt when Taijuan Walker finally gets back in there. But
what is with you and ending shows like this lately? It's just lately it's been like, we'll see what happens. Maybe they'll just blow up and everything will be ruined. But hey, we'll talk to you next time on the season.
It's fair. I don't know why. It's because I don't have a real good way to end the podcast.
Everybody understands the capacity of this team. Everybody listening to this probably watched a Sixers game last night that left them feeling the same way they
decrepit.
Felt a lot.
Yeah.
Yeah. So everyone's aware of the capacity to be let down. Then
you're right. It's because I don't know how to end a podcast well. So I'm just going to end it this way. The Phillies are red hot, 7 in a row. Go Phils. Make sure you check out everything we're doing over at our partners, BillyPenn.com, and hit our landing page there, BillyPenn.com/hittingseason. Read Justin's work in Baseball Prospectus and go to our Hitting Season Patreon, which is at Patreon.com/hittingseason. You can also, of course, read my stuff over at The Good Fight as well. Thanks, everybody, for tuning in. We'll talk to you next time right here on Hitting Season.